Welcome to Induction Vault, a production of iHeartRadio and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 32nd Annual Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Ceremony.
This episode of Induction Vault takes us to 2017, where singer-songwriter Jackson Browne offers a moving induction of his idol, Joan Baez. Speaking as a true fan, Jackson illustrates how much Joan meant to his generation and that the first album he ever bought was one of Joan's. Jackson describes her as the voice of the new folk movement, embodying the search for what was real and eternal during the many changes happening in the 60s, and how her deeply expressive and mesmerizing voice led Jackson to write his own songs and use his voice to make the changes he wanted to see in the world. Joan's acceptance speech is equally inspirational as she recounts her beginnings as a folk artist and lifts up the many musicians who influenced and befriended her. She then shares her story of political activism and how she became a practitioner of nonviolence, using her voice in the fight for justice.
Please welcome Jackson Browne.
The changes that began happening in the 60s, the civil rights movement, opposition to the Vietnam War, the sexual revolution, the spiritual exploration and consciousness expansion, women's liberation, none of that can be separated from the folk music that was being rediscovered and brought to the forefront of popular culture. On college campuses, in coffee houses, and at folk festivals, a new generation was discovering the true history of this country through the music of the people who built it. And we weren't just listening to it, we were learning to sing and play these songs that contained the hardship and the struggles and the hopes of people who had come to this country as immigrants and as slaves. Folk musicians began traveling to parts of the country where people still made this music, and they began finding out who was actually here. And that was something you couldn't find out in those days by watching TV or going to the movies. Of all the many great artists who were singing and recording this music and who embodied the search for what was real, historic, and eternal, the one who suddenly emerged and came to national prominence was Joan Baez. From the moment she appeared in the Cambridge folk scene, she had a spellbinding effect on her audiences. In 1960, at the age of 19, she released her first album, and then a second album, and then a live album, and then she was on the cover of Time magazine as the face and the voice of the new folk movement. The first record I ever bought with my own money was Joan Baez's second album. I was 14. I went down to our little record store there in Fullerton, out in Orange County, where I had just moved with my family from LA, and they had a listening booth where you could play records before buying them. And I saw this album with her picture on it, and she looked like the girls I'd grown up with in Highland Park, my old neighborhood in LA. I went into that listening booth, and right away I was taken with what was for me completely new music. Just voice and guitar, but so ethereal, powerfully in tune, deeply expressive, dramatic, hypnotic. By the third song, I was completely mesmerized. I took the record home and started learning to play that third song. It was called Lily of the West. The purity of her voice was intoxicating. Her enormous dynamics and the command she had as a singer, mixed with the drama and the mystery of those old songs, led me into the world of folk and blues, and the voice and guitar-driven narratives that have been at the center of my musical quest my whole life. Almost immediately, she introduced her audience to the songs of Bob Dylan. Joan Baez gave Bob Dylan a national audience, when she began singing his songs, those who had been time traveling through folk music and discovering all the human drama and the eternal truths of our shared history were suddenly in the present with God on our side. With God on our side, this Dylan song, which summarized and examined the history of U.S. wars and the supposed rationale for each of them, was one of the two songs that Joan and Bob sang on her concert tour in 1963, catapulting the broadside, or what is now known as the protest song, into the consciousness of a whole generation. Her second live album released that year contained her rather shy, almost casual invitation to join her in singing We Shall Overcome. And both of these songs had a galvanizing effect on me and my friends. We joined CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality. We joined hands and we sang and we demonstrated and we started writing songs. And we were doing this out in Orange County, the bastion of the ultra-conservative John Birch Society. But it was happening all over America. And when I saw that Joan Baez was marching with Martin Luther King, I felt that I was represented there and that they were marching for all of us. And that they were marching for, to paraphrase Langston Hughes, the America that has never been yet and yet must be. There's no way to quantify how much Joan Baez means to people of my generation who grew up listening to her voice leading us in singing We Shall Overcome. And when I hear the recording now, I feel a deep sadness that the song is as needed now as it was then. Now, even more. The changes that began happening in the 60s are still happening. And the injustice we opposed then, we must still oppose. And we need to be empowered now as much as we have ever needed to be empowered. To track Joan Baez's involvement in human rights and social justice is to chart the evolution of our own moral awakening and of our own growing planetary consciousness. Her example has been from the beginning empowering for women and for men. Of course, the women are smarter, and it's taken men a little longer to realize that we were being empowered too. But that's right. Joan Baez empowered me and countless people like me to sing and play guitar when I was a kid, not that much younger than her, and to find my voice and to eventually try to use it to make the changes I need to see in the world. So, it is my honor and my pleasure and a recognition long, long overdue to welcome Joan Baez to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
After the break, we'll hear an acceptance speech from Joan Baez on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Vault.
Jackson. Thank you. Thank you, my compatriot, troublemaker, Jackson Brown. Thank you for that introduction. And it gives me enormous pleasure to accept this prestigious and very cool award tonight. Thank you to the Hall of Fame for this somewhat unlikely induction. A special thanks to my manager, Mark Spector, for having kept my career visible, viable, and vibrant. I'm aware that I'm speaking to many young people who, without this induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, would have no clue who I am. My granddaughter had no clue who I was until I took her backstage at a Taylor Swift concert where she got a selfie, an autograph, a t-shirt, and newfound respect for her grandmother. Thank you. Though one cannot say I'm a rock and roll artist, one cannot overlook the folk music of the 60s, thank you, Jackson, and the immense effect it had on popular music, including rock and roll. Nor can anyone overlook the role that I played in that phenomenon. I was lucky enough to have found my voice when coffee shops were the order of the day. My first job in music was on Tuesday nights at Club 47 in Harvard Square, where I sang three sets and made $15 a night, all as I gleefully flunked out of college. I owe my beginnings to the friends and folk artists from whom I picked up the chords, the melodies, the finger picking, and the budding repertoire. Again, at the right place and time, I knew and was friends with most of the rock and roll idols of the 60s and 70s. Some of those friendships I treasure to this day. Most of us in the community of both folk and rock music share with each other the similarities and differences of how we got to where we are today. We also share the awareness of the blessed and the bizarre, which accompanies us in our everyday lives, lives which are seldom really private. Once a friend said to me when I was recognized and approached by a fan on the street, "Oh, come on, admit it, you really like this." And I said, there was nothing to admit. It was a fact. My public is a kind of family. I'm beholden to those rock and rollers. Thank you. Thank you. I'm beholden to those rock and rollers who are long gone and to those who live on, who have enriched and brightened my life from vinyl to digital and everything in between and back to vinyl. My childhood and teen years were filled with classical, country and western, rhythm and blues, and the hit parade. When I was 16, my aunt took me to see a Pete Seeger concert, and my mom brought home a Harry Belafonte album. Though Pete was not in any way gorgeous like Harry, he was already committed to making social change. He paid a high price for holding fast to his principles. I learned the meaning of taking a risk from Pete. The Cold War was getting a foothold and ushered in a shameful period in this country. My family was then Quaker and socially and politically active. Pete's influence on me took like a good vaccine, and I turned my attention to folk music and political activism. My voice, thank you. My voice is my greatest gift. I can speak freely about the uniqueness of it precisely because it's just that, a gift. The second greatest gift was a desire to use it the way I have since I was 16 and became a student and practitioner of nonviolence, both in my personal life and as a way of fighting for social change. What is given, thank you. What has given my life deep meaning and unending pleasure has been to use my voice in the battle against injustice. It has brought me in touch with my own purpose. It has also brought me in touch with people of every background, with open, generous, fun-loving, hard-working people here in this country and around the world. It has brought me in touch with the wealthy, the ones who are stuck in selfishness, and the ones who give their generosity of their time and resources to benefit the less fortunate and light the way for others to do the same. And I've met and tried to walk in the shoes of those who are hungry, thirsty, cold and cast out, people imprisoned for their beliefs, and others who have broken the law, paid the price, and now live in hopelessness and despair. I've exonerated prisoners who have spent decades in solitary confinement awaiting execution. I've exhausted refugees, immigrants, the excluded and the bullied, those who have fought for this country, sacrificed, and now live in the shadows of rejection. people of color, the old, the ill, the physically challenged, the LGBTQ community, sorry. And now, in the new political and cultural reality in which we find ourselves, there's much work to be done. Where empathy is failing and sharing has become usurped by greed and lust for power, let us double, triple, and quadruple our own efforts to empathize and to give our resources and ourselves. Let us together repeal and replace brutality and make compassion a priority. Together, let us build a bridge, a great bridge, a beautiful bridge to once again welcome the tired and the poor. And we will pay for that bridge with our commitment. We, the people, must speak truth to power and be ready to make sacrifices. We, the people, are the only ones who can create change. I'm ready. I hope you are too. I want my granddaughter to know that I fought against an evil tide and had the masses by my side. Thank you. When all of these things are accompanied by music of every genre, the fight for a better world, one brave step at a time, becomes not just bearable, but possible and beautiful. Thank you again.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Vault. For more on your favorite inductees, to shop inductee merch, or to plan your trip to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, visit rockhall.com. Plus, view the 2020 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Special on demand on HBO Max. Our executive producers are Noel Brown, Shelby Morrison, and Risa Gerke. Supervising producer is Taylor Chacoin. Research and archival assistance from Isabel Kiefer and Shannon Erb. Thanks again for joining us on this week's episode of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Vault. Induction Vault is a production of iHeartRadio and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.